You are listening to the Loikamania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everybody? You're listening to Loikamania. I am Pat Loika, of course, and this week I have a very special guest, which, I mean, all of them are special. I need to stop saying special guests because they're all special. One of the guys whose work I've been really enjoying, particularly in Marvel's Thunderbolts, but he's also in the middle of a stint for one of my favorite Vertigo books. Actually, it's my favorite Vertigo book right now, Northlanders. He is, of course, Declan Shalvey. Welcome to the show, Declan.
Thanks very much, and I insist on being called special.
Okay, then we will run with special just for you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I've been a fan of your work for some time now. Actually, I first heard of your work around the time of 28 Days Later was coming out through Boom, and I think I heard it on I forgot which podcast it was I heard it from, but they were raving about it, particularly about your work. And I finally got to see your work. It was very cool. It's like if Joe Kubert, Kev Walker, and Sean Phillips had a love child. They produced the work that you put out. So I'm really digging the style, and I really dig your use of textures and shades. And I just want to kind of say that and get that out of the way first, because I love your stuff.
thanks very much. Yeah, I'll take that description. I would be perfectly happy with that.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. I think maybe the podcast might have been Chris Niesman, maybe on.
I remember that
because I was like, oh my, because I listened to like 11 o'clock comics for years, and it was really weird having like Chris talk so complimentary about my stuff. That's the only reason I remember, is because I was quite flattered at the time.
Yeah, it's also one of those rare occasions where Chris wasn't in a good movie back then. Chris can get really cranky, but I love the guy. He's a good dude.
But I think a lot of people first started seeing my stuff on 28 Days Later, and I think the Comic Twerp blog as well. More people saw my stuff on Comic Twerp than 28 Days Later. But I really liked working on that book. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's a great. I guess it's kind of your first real big break. But before we get into that, let's kind of get back to your beginnings first. Like, what got you into comic books?
What got me into comic books? I think it would probably be the Batman animated series and the X-Men cartoon series, because I was drawing comics when I was a kid, but I didn't know what comics were. You know, like I think as far as I can remember, I was like reading like, you know, Donald Duck comics, but then I was watching these X-Men cartoons, so I started drawing comics of them without realizing that there was actually comics of them, you know. So then I got older, and then I found out, like, and of course, like, I had to get them, but they were very difficult to get where I'm from a small town in Ireland, and they didn't have regular newsstands, monthly books. You could kind of manage to get them. I think I remember my first issue was issue 35 of X-Men. Liam Sharp drew it, and Cyclops and Phoenix came back from the past.
From the future. I remember that story, actually.
Yeah, no, well, the future and then the past, because they had the Adventures of Cyclops and Phoenix. But I only know this afterwards. At the time, I didn't know what was going on. Then the next issue was the Phalanx Covenant, and it was Banshee, Emma Frost, Jubilee, and Sabretooth. I'm like, where the hell is Wolverine? Because I only knew the cartoon. I was very confused. Actually, that's quite interesting. Sometimes when people talk about like accessibility in comics, that was the most inaccessible comic to read. But, you know, I clearly was just hooked, and I just, you know, I had to find out everything, find out, you know, why they were there, what was going on. It would have been, I think the cartoons at the time did a really good job of introducing it to the characters and getting you to care about the characters. So then once I found out there were comics, I tracked them down as much as I could. It was difficult to get. It was very hard to get American comics when I was growing up.
Yeah, I mean, Just by location. I imagine it's kind of hard to do. You mentioned how hard it's like. Where do you end up picking comics up? Is there a royal order or any shops?
I actually managed to talk the news agent at the time to order it in for me, but it was very hit and miss whether they could do it. So sometime one month I may not have gotten it. Another month I might have gotten it. I think because I was ordering X-Men and then the Age of Apocalypse happened, they changed the title of the book. So I didn't get any comics for the length of that crossover. And I didn't know why, because, I didn't have the internet. I had absolutely no idea why I couldn't get X-Men comics. And the poor lady, this old lady, the news agent, she didn't have a clue either, She was just doing it to be nice, because it's not like she was making much money off me. She was just getting a comic a month. But there was a nearby city that did have a comic shop, and as a special occasion, my mum would take me there for my birthday or for just as a treat. So that's where I kind of found out a lot more stuff. That's where I found out a lot of more DC comics, a lot more Marvel comics. But again, those, you're talking three trips to the comic shop a year, So I could only do so much to really get into it. But there was Panini is a European company. They did a really good job of reprinting Spider-Man and X-Men comics, where you could buy one comic and you get three issues basically for the price of one. So I was actually able to brush up on comics I had missed. So all the X-Men comics before then I was able to brush up on. I was reading the Clone Saga through there. So when they started publishing comics, I think it was maybe 95, 96. That's when I was able to really get into American comics from those reprints.
Oh, wow. That must be a pain. But eventually you got to that age where you wanted to do comics. How was breaking in like on your end? Because you're in Ireland. I imagine, of course, you'd probably be going to conventions in London or wherever. But how was that like for you?
Yeah, I didn't know how to do it. I was drawing. I had this. I have this X-Men saga where they fight a team I created, back somewhere. I was doing this stuff on my own in school. I have a three-part X-Men series that unfinished. Maybe I'll finish it. Mm-hmm. But I was drawing, but I just didn't know how to go about it. So I asked my art teacher in school, and he said she'll go to art college because he didn't know either. So I went to art college, and I kind of didn't stop reading comics for a while, just again because the inaccessibility, I couldn't get them. I discovered this thing called Girls. I was very interested in that, because I went to an all boys school, so this Girls thing was new. I forgot the question. I got hung up in the all boys school bit.
No, I mean, how did you end up submitting your work to people?
Oh, of course. I'm sorry. After college, I was working menial jobs and decided I if I was going to do comics, I had to be serious about it. So I looked online, and for me anyway, in Ireland, the internet was still kind of it wasn't the phenomenon it was now. It was slowly kind of creeping in more culturally, and I found that there was a comic artist in the north of Ireland making an appearance. So I met him at this little show. His name's PJ Holden, and he was really good. He told me basically there's loads of conventions in the UK. If that's what you want to do, that's where you have to go. So I took his advice, and I haven't had to go to a lot of UK shows. I think I've went to two UK shows every year for the past 7 years, just showing my portfolio, getting feedback. But there was one writer who was publishing his own stories, but he would get other people to draw them. So he said to me, look, I really like your work. If you draw my story, I will publish it as a comic. So it wasn't a paid job, but it was an opportunity to draw an entire comic all on my own and have it published. And it was probably the best move I ever did. Because I wasn't drawing at a professional level, but I was quite good for my age. But it gave me something where I could say, this is what I worked on, instead of a short story in an anthology or just part of another team or a webcomic. I actually had a comic. And from there, things just started kind of moving on from there, really. I got work with a crowd called Classical Comics that do graphic novel adaptations. I did a couple of graphic novels for them. There was an Irish there was a guy in Ireland who was doing his own comics, and he was paying. So kind of incrementally, just every project I got better and better and better, and then somehow I ended up doing Marvel Comics and DC Comics.
That's pretty awesome, man.
And well, so that's over the course of like 5 years, you know. Wow, so yeah. It didn't just happen straight away. But I think rather interestingly, I went to America about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I started because I was having comics published in America, because I was doing 28 Days Later. Stuff of mine was seen. I could meet people. People knew my work because they could easily find it. When I was doing UK graphic novels, I mean, that's the one problem working on a graphic novel is you disappear drawing it. But the benefit of being on a monthly comic book is that your work is on the stands every month. Yep. And going to New York when I did at that time, I think certainly worked out well for me.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, you're working – I mean, it looks like you were I was kind of looking up your older stuff. Like, I mean, you did some Judge Dredd stuff, it looks like.
Looking up my old stuff is not a good move, man.
Oh, it's not too bad.
I would hardly recommend against it. No, actually what I did was – that was a story for the Irish writer. But 2000 AD were actually making a move at that time to publish – indie stories as from small press, mm-hmm. people doing their own stuff to help kind of promote, you know, creators. And they actually end up hiring some guys through that. But I've never actually drawn for 2000 AD. I just had work reprinted in it.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Which is weird because generally, culturally, like everybody who lives over here is like a huge 2000 AD nut. But I never read it when I was a kid. My affinity was actually for American superhero comics because that's what I read. Whereas everybody else in my generation was all about like Judge Dredd and Rogue Trooper and stuff, and it totally went over my head.
Now you mentioned you're into X-Men. Like, what were the other books that you were into like when you were younger?
Oh man, well it was predominantly X-Men and Spider-Man because that's all I could
that's
really
all you
get.
Could get.
that's all I could get reasonably regularly. If I went to a comic shop, I would get some Batman stuff. I would get. I remember actually when Thunderbolts came out, I got that because I happened to be there when it in a comic shop when it started. But I would basically get anything I could. And then find out afterwards if I liked it. But I did stick with X-Men and remember specifically Amazing Spider-Man because Mark Bagley drew it. Yeah. I was a huge fan of Andy Kubert as well. So I followed X-Men for years. I guess it's because that's all I could regularly get. But it was those two books that were really, really big for me.
You talk about Andy Kubert and X-Men. It's amazing how much that guy evolved over the course of his run on that title. I remember when he first started, like during I don't know if you were picking up the book at the time, but the Executioner's Song story.
And I found that out retrospectively. I went back and found all that stuff, yeah. And it's crazy.
It's crazy how much that guy has grown, and then I can kind of see the same kind of growth in you in your stuff, you know, through various books.
It's actually interesting, like the way you described my stuff, I'm very happy to hear that, mm. But I can see the Bagley and the Andy Kubert influence in my stuff, especially drawing superheroes. There's sometimes where I'm kind of like framing scenes and I realize I'm not copying what Andy Kubert did, but I remember the way he told stories. Mm-hmm. I can see is actually really like had a huge influence on how I tell stories, especially superhero stuff. It's really weird considering like how messy and, you know, textury I illustrate. I can still lean back on that like superhero foundation.
Yeah, and there is a very and you do, you have a really good knack at doing the superhero art. Just looking at your stuff, like but you know I like how your stuff is so it doesn't look like any other superhero book, but it's a very superhero style. It's hard to describe it properly, but I think the kind of scratchy lines that you incorporate every now and then, and then all the textures, it really does kind of, you know. It's a really different take on doing superhero stuff, but I can kind of, but you know, after you mentioned Bagley, I kind of looked at your some of your more recent stuff again, and I can see, you know, as far as the storytelling, I can kind of see where you're coming from on that end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't look at him anymore. I don't look at Andy Kubert anymore for as regards inspiration. That's not mm-hmm. It's not the type of stuff I want to do. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I still can put my hand up and go like, this is where I started. It's uh-huh. I. I would like my I think my sensibilities have matured somewhat. Whereas I think everything I've learned from those guys I've learned by studying them, and then I moved on, and now the stuff that I would study now is completely different. But you know, I'm aware the founding the founding building blocks, the starting building blocks are in that superhero stuff. But yeah.
All right, that, yeah, well, it's whatever, you know, we'll get to, you know, more of the Thunderbolt stuff in a little bit. So now let's talk quickly about your time at 28 Days Later. Like, obviously they've probably seen your, you know, they've probably seen your work from overseas. Like, how did they end up, how did Boom end up contacting you to do that for?
They just emailed me up, actually. If that's a phrase, emailed me up. They just asked if I'd be interested, and I was very interested. Because I was doing graphic novel adaptations of classical books. I'd been doing it for a year or so, and you know, something different, something more sci-fi, something edgier, something contemporary set. I really wanted to do something contemporary. It was everything I was interested in drawing at the time, and they just asked, and I did a test, and I didn't get it, and then they came back to me about a month later. Saying that I did get it. So I assume whoever was drawing it pulled out or got another job or something. But I remember deciding to make the most of it because it was the first opportunity I had to have American comic books, and I could draw all the things I would be interested in drawing. And I could really, I don't know, I thought it was an extremely good chance to do work that I thought was good. And hopefully I would find an avenue in which people would find my stuff and like it. It was kind of a bit risky because the pay wasn't great. It wasn't as good as what I was getting beforehand, but I thought it was important to really take the plunge and really have a go at doing a monthly comic book and trying to find my feet in American comics, I guess.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, you know, at least getting your work out there on a regular basis, at least, kind of helps you, and you know, eventually it'll end up paying off because you know, people will be seeing your work on a regular basis, and then you'll think they'll realize that you're reliable in getting your work out there.
There is that, but also I think you kind of have to trick people to like your stuff sometimes. Like if somebody, I don't think people really respond well to my stuff at first, but I've been meeting a lot more Thunderbolts fans in the last year, and they'd say, "Oh, I didn't like it at first, but now I'm used to it, and I quite like it." So it's kind of, if you stay in one place long enough, I think that people will grow to appreciate what you're doing, rather than when they just see the, first of all, like, you know, if somebody likes Thunderbolts and they open up, they are expecting to see Kev Walker, I think they're going to be disappointed when they see my stuff, just because they want to see Kev. But by being in a book long enough, people will learn to appreciate what you're doing instead of always wanting to see this other thing. I think that's the one advantage of being on a book, is that you have a portfolio every month where people can get used to how you draw. Because, you know, I don't draw in a very obvious superhero style. It's not very clean. It's not very flashy. But I think once you kind of get used to it, people seem to be liking it more.
I'm glad to hear that, man, because, you know, when I first saw you taking over that book, I was digging the style. I mean, it wasn't jarring because Kev Walker draws a certain way. I think it's kind of weird to say, but his style's a bit more cleaner than yours, you know, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. But, you know, there is a noticeable difference, but at the same time, it's not jarring. It feels like it belongs in the same book. It feels like, oh, maybe the art. Maybe they switched inkers or something, But it worked really well, so I thought it was great. Like when you took over during the Shadowland arc of Thunderbolts, I really dug your take on the characters. There are some panels there that were just so they're fantastic. There's a panel where the Juggernaut and Crossbones and the Fixer were getting jumped by a bunch of hand ninjas, and you know, I love how the panel was composed for one thing. I love how they were being swarmed upon. They're like weapons in the air, and you got, and then you got Crossbones just shooting an M16, and the Juggernaut just holding up all these guys. And I thought it was such a great panel. And,
oh, thanks, man. I really liked that page.
Yeah, that is a fantastic page. And then there are a lot of, like, you know, particularly your first issue of, like, when I first saw this issue, I was like, oh my god, this dude is great. At first I thought, if Kev Walker is gone, I don't mind this guy being the guy, because you have such a great take on these characters and such a great, you know, your action is great. The panel where the Juggernaut gets kicked right in the stomach by
Hand
Ninja was great. And there's another panel too where I think it's you shot it from behind Crossbones, but he's frying people with a flamethrower.
He's looking up at him.
Kind of from behind him though. You know, I mean, from. He's from behind, and we're looking up at him then.
Oh, yeah, well, there's two different shots of him using the flamethrower in two different issues, but one of them is from behind, yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about the one from behind. I think that's in the second chapter, I believe.
Yes, that's
149.
Right. But, yeah. Sorry, I'm just enjoying describing the comics to me, because I'm not used to somebody actually following it as well. We could just do this for the next half hour.
Yeah.
Tell me how else I'm great.
Yeah, but seriously, I enjoy your storytelling. You have such a knack for these great, big, gigantic battle scenes. You know, it's fantastic.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. I mean, I quite genuinely appreciate it, because I was worried straight away that, you know, people would not like my stuff. I was actually extremely worried about it. But people seem to think there's enough of a similarity between me and Kev. Personally, I don't think there's really any similarity between Kev and I, except that we both don't have that very heavy superhero influence. I think we're both guys who like to draw. Mm-hmm. Drawing superheroes, you know, and I think that approach, I wouldn't say it's more realistic, but it's slightly more, maybe it's grounded differently, and it's, there's maybe a different, I hope this doesn't sound condescending, but a level of maturity to it, where it doesn't look like comic book fan fiction, it looks like a different type of drawing applied to superheroes, whereas we both have that in common, rather than, I don't really think we draw the same at all, to be honest.
Okay, well, I can kind of see.
Oh, I could be wrong. I could be absolutely wrong. It's just kind of how I see it.
Yeah, it's really all on the eyes of the beholder. So I think there's this, you know, it's so close that you can kind of mistake it for that. But I've been loving your own Thunderbolts new issue. You came out recently, number 166, and you got, man, I love your Mr. Hyde.
Oh, thanks.
He's kind of taken Juggernaut's place as far as, you know, the big character on the team, that the big superimposing character that just kind of pops out. This current storyline with Thunderbolts, actually the time traveling stuff, has been a lot of fun. That book has been known for, you know, for all, you know, every so often, like, there's a big status quo change and they deal with the status quo, like, ever since the beginning. And you got to do something that's completely different from what the Thunderbolts were when they first started. And
yeah, it's really strange, especially now, because I'm currently drawing the original Thunderbolts versus the contemporary Thunderbolts or Underbolts. And it's very strange, because I'm looking at a lot of the issues. Actually, the one thing that's a real pain is that I wanted to draw the original characters, but like, their costumes are actually pretty very complicated. I found I'm actually much slower on this issue because I'm trying to get all those costumes right. But it is very interesting looking at what it was and what it is. But this upcoming arc where I think it starts in issue 172, it's great. It's really great how they revisit what the Thunderbolts were and what they became. And it's this really big, epic kind of sci-fi story. With all these various time travel elements. Like, it's the craziest thing Jeff's written, and I think it's fantastic. I can't wait to really get into it.
Now, you mentioned that you're drawing the classic Thunderbolts. Now, are you talking about, like, from their first appearance, like, you know, during the Bagley era, or?
Yeah, I'm quite literally drawing a page with all the original Thunderbolts right now. Citizen V. Mac 1. I'm trying to remember, because some of the same characters, but they have different names. There was Meteorite and Techno, a Songbird and Atlas.
And Meteorite's costume probably is a pain in the ass to draw.
It is, but if I'm being honest, I actually prefer it. I don't like the costume that she's in at the moment. It's just too plain to me. But then I'm drawing the original costume, and it's too complex for me. I'd like to find a happy medium.
Actually, this is a good subject to go to. I think you designed all of the second string Thunderbolts, the so-called Underbolts, you know, Troll and the new look for Boomerang and all those guys.
Yeah, actually, Troll was Kev's design. He designed her for, I think it was his first issue in that Thunderbolts run. Mm-hmm. So that was his. Mm-hmm. But the rest of them, Centurious, Shocker, Hyde, Boomerang, and is that it? It's hard to keep track, actually, especially during Fear Itself, and it all kicked off. And I there's one page where they all come in a page, and I think there's like 16 characters. I'm not sure, I was really glad I could design those characters because it made the book feel a little bit more like myself. Because I you know, the whole time I was trying to adapt to how Kev designed his characters, so it was really good to. I felt more like I was contributing to the book by designing like the Underbolt team. But Shocker's gone now, and there's going to be a slight alteration maybe to Centurious. But I had a lot of fun designing those characters. I like character design a lot.
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to, you know, kind of talk a little bit about that a little more, you know, in detail, because what I loved about the new designs for these characters, like, if you were to silhouette all the characters and put them next to each other, you could tell who is who, and just by their shadow, and the personalities of the characters really stand out because of that. I thought, you know, like the redesign for Centurious is fantastic. I never, that character was so below my radar, and I never really cared for him. But he looks.
Yeah, I didn't have a clue who he was. Yeah.
Like I saw your design for him. Like, well, this guy looks pretty damn cool. His character, his personality is pretty great too. Like, you know, now that we know more about him.
Yeah, well, I didn't know anything about him except, you know, what was on his Wikipedia page. But he was so, like, I saw the original costume. I'm like, I'm not drawing that. it was just too elaborate. So I tried to draw something more contemporary, something that made his armor slightly more accessible. I wanted to kind of be like lobster shells. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if need be, you could draw like various kind of like, you know, wires and stuff coming out from any point on his arms and legs, and also keep a kind of a regal aspect about him, you know. That's why his belt is up around his rib cage. I tried to keep the original pattern that was on his outfit. I had a little bit of back and forth with Jeff. I mean, I sent Jeff designs, and like he might have some suggestions, and I'd send stuff back. But it was a bit of to and fro on Centurious. Actually, an interesting note Jeff had was my original version, because I was trying to stay as close to his original design. It was like he had like goggles and a headpiece. Uh-huh. And Jeff said, you know, he said, I think we can do without another like black character with goggles. and I was like, oh, and I thought about it, and he was dead right. There's so many like black characters, and they all have goggles for some reason. That was a really good note. I'm glad that we stayed away from that stereotype. But I think maybe my favorite's Boomerang. Just because I don't know. I like the simplified design. I like the V's. I like how it comes around on his shoulders. How I managed to have the boomerangs kind of seem practically on his outfit.
Yeah, I like all of them, but, you know, he said Hyde and Centurious are my favorites.
Hyde was hard to get right. So, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you.
I was just going to say, just the addition of the top hat really makes Hyde.
Well, the temptation is to take it off because it's actually a little hard to draw, but Jeff's description was that he's, you know, a huge, lumbering, towering, you know, monster dressed in fine Victorian apparel. Mm. So balancing those two aspects, like I draw him like the Hulk, but I make sure that I think the top hat makes it, because without the top hat, he would look unkempt.
Yeah.
You know, his hair will be everywhere. Mm-hmm. So by having the top hat on, it kind of, the ridiculousness of the character kind of is more apparent, which is the kind of most fun thing about him, I think.
Yeah. And actually, the very first page of, you know, issue 166, where, you know, there's a page with Hyde and Satana holding, you know, the dead girl. That is such a menacing shot of Hyde, because, like, that, you know, that it's lit in a certain way where, you know, most of Hyde's face is in the shadow, but you can just see his eyes and you can see that his smile, and you're just like, what a creepy looking dude, and he's very imposing. So I think that the hat works in many ways. So I stuck with it.
I decided to change the hat for that story because if he is. The whole idea is that he is Jack the Ripper, or, you know, we believe him to be Jack the Ripper. Mm-hmm. And we all know we're familiar with that kind of silhouette of Jack the Ripper. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't want to give him a top hat because I didn't want him to be too similar to the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in Hyde, who did wear a top hat. But I decided just with that story, I kind of had to give him a top hat just so he could be more associated with Jack the Ripper. In the current arc now, I have him back in that smaller rounded cap.
Yeah, I'm really digging the designs, and I think, you know, I wouldn't mind actually if these guys were to spin off in their own little book, and, you know, I think it's a lot of fun. You mentioned Centurius for a bit, and I looked up his old design just to kind of, you know, compare that he had the goggles back then.
Yeah.
And they did not look good back then.
No, I tried to keep the metallic aspects of that. There was all metallic on his arms and legs, but he had this collar around his neck. So I just thought those were the most important things. And he had that kind of like oval design pattern on his chest. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I got rid of the purple. I made it black instead, but I wanted to keep as much of the original element as I could, but I just didn't know how to draw that costume. It was just like, not saying it's ridiculous, but I didn't want to draw that over and over again, you know?
Well, yeah, just trying to draw that is I don't think I can do it either. But
yeah, because I'm referencing you know, the original Songbird costume and the Moonstone or the Meteoroid costume and Techno's costume for these original ones. And I'm going, God, Mark Bagley just made this up as he went along. You're trying to find some consistency, but they're all so elaborate that you're going to slip up, you know?
Yeah, particularly the Meteoroid costume. Seriously, the Meteoroid costume was, I always thought it was a pain to draw.
I'm convinced every panel he just made it up. Because there's no consistency in it. There might be like three panels where it's kind of the same. So I've made a character like map of my own just so I can apply it to my own drawing. But you know, things were different back then. I'm sure he had to move quickly. But it's a little frustrating trying to figure out how to make sense of it.
Yeah, and I don't know, back then though, I mean, the some of the stuff is just. I guess it was during the 90s, so, you know, there tend to be certain things that you associate with the 90s as far as costume design goes. I mean, like the pads and Songbird, it must have been very difficult to be Songbird moving around with all that stuff on your shoulder.
Yeah, actually, I had to draw a pose of her with her arms up and realize, how the hell is she going to get her arms up? Because she's got these, protective pads over her shoulders like she does now, but there's more of them. But I actually have to say, I do quite like the designs. Some of them are actually quite interesting, especially Atlas's. He has these guards in his hands. I really, really like Citizen V's design. And I think I prefer draw the old Mac 1 rather than the Mac 5 at the moment. As much as I'm saying, like, this is ridiculous, actually, I think they're very well designed.
Yeah, I think Mac 1 was kind of sleeker as far as the design goes compared to like the future iterations of that costume.
Well, you can actually see the Beetle influence a lot more, I think. When you look at like Mac 5, or is he Mac 5 or Mac 6?
He's Mac 5 right now, yeah.
The current Mac, oh yeah, Mac 5. Like, you wouldn't think he was ever the Beetle, but when you look at the original Mac 1 design, you're like, oh, there's kind of a little bit of the Beetle there, because you forget that he used to be the Beetle. Mm-hmm. But there's a little bit more shell aspect, but there's a kind of a nice zigzag pattern that goes down his rib cage, down along his abs, and I'm like, that's actually really nice. I definitely appreciate the old designs. They're just a little bit more complex, so they're a little harder to draw.
Yeah, and I think even Mark Bagley realized that, because like I remember like about 13 issues in or so, he redesigned Moonstone into a more, you know, basically to a spandex outfit.
You can do a simplifying down the design he had, all right, definitely. I wouldn't mind seeing a mix between the costume she has now and the costume she had at the beginning.
Yeah, personally, I agree with you there, because I don't know.
Well, no, that's just something I would do. But you know, these aren't my characters, so.
Yeah, I see what you were saying though, because I don't know. She does look kind of plain. There's nothing that kind of makes her stand out in her current look.
Yeah, there's just that one icon on her chest, and I don't think that's like, you know, okay. If you just have her as a silhouette, like you were saying, I don't think she stands out as being. As being Moonstone, she just seems like a female figure.
Yeah,
and I have no idea who designed that costume, by the way. I hope I'm not offending anybody.
Yeah, I think that first came about. That came about sometime. I think that may have been Tom Grummett or something, because that was during the when they relaunched Thunderbolts, like back in, around 2004 or so. But you know, moving past that, you're part of a couple of online art blog collectives, and I've always been. You're part of Comic Tort, and of course, you're part of Eclectic Mix.
Yep.
Now I've always been curious. You know, how did you guys decide to come up with doing that? Because I think you guys may have been. Like, I think Comic Tort may have been the first to do this, or I'm not. You know, I could be wrong, but
no, actually, we
noticed.
We had Eclectic Mix first, and it was myself and Will Sliney, who he's drawn like Farscape for Boom for the last few years, and we knew each other longer out of all the other Irish guys, but we were starting to get to know everybody. And there was, you know, only seven Irish guys working professionally in comics. And we were thinking, Joe, it would be really good if we did like a sketchbook, you know, all just get together, because, you know, we try and meet up at Christmas time because none of us have office jobs, you know. Mm-hmm. Whenever, like, you know, our friends go off for like Christmas parties, we're like, oh, we don't have a Christmas party. So we tried to just band together in that regard. But we didn't end up doing that. But then we thought, you know, if there's seven of us, if one of us did an image like every week, just one image between the seven of us, we would have like a blog that would update daily. And so we just decided to give it a go. We're doing it like 2.5 years now, I think. So we're doing that for a long time. But I think I did a lot of like some of my best stuff on that blog. But Comic Tour happened, I'd say, maybe a year after that. And that was, I think it was just because I was talking to Chris Somney online and Evan Shanner and Mitch Gerads. We were all just kind of joking. And one day we said, I did a Thor drawing. Mm-hmm. And Chris had done a Thor drawing. And Tom Fowler showed a Thor drawing he'd done like a week beforehand. And we were all going, oh, we should all try draw the same character. So we did. And then that kind of turned into like, oh, let's like put it on a blog. And then Chris's wife sorted out a blog, and it just all kind of came from there. Really. It was very strangely organic. I was on Twitter at the right time, the right moment. And it just all kind of worked out. I ended up being on a blog with like really well-known guys, which I'm sure helped my career exponentially.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it increased your profile because, and of course, you know, by association also, you can kind of, you know, I mean, if you didn't think much of your work, it certainly is elevated now because of the company you keep, you know?
Yeah, well, the nature of, like, if you know that Evan Shanner or Chris Somney is going to be putting up a piece the same week as you, you're going to try a bit harder, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're not just going to easily just knock out a drawing and go, yeah, that'll be fine because the standard is so high. The same thing with the Mixed blog is that, It's. I think there's like a natural, friendly element of competition there, whereas you don't want to look crap, so you will try a little bit harder. And you know, I still was crap, but you know, it was better than it would have been.
Well, I think you do some good stuff. I've seen a lot of your
stuff. I appreciate that.
There, that I really, really enjoyed, and I said it's great to see you kind of putting out something out there. You did stuff every week. I don't know.
I was trying to do a piece for both blogs every week for a good while there, but I think since I started working for Marvel, it's been harder and harder because I put all my work into my sequential pages, trying to make them the best I can. So there's not as much time to do kind of like, you know, fan drawings, you know, especially doing Northlanders and Thunderbolts for the last few months. I feel really bad. I haven't had time to do more fun stuff. But I'm hoping I will in the next while try and make up for it.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about Northlanders for a little bit. I love that book. When I found that you're going to be drawing that book, I was like, oh, wow, this is great.
Oh, man, I think I felt.
I'll go on. I'm sorry.
No, I'm very sorry. Go on.
I was very pleased to hear you doing that book, if only for a couple of months, because that was one of my favorite books. Like, it is my favorite Vertigo book that's currently running, and I'm still pissed off that it's getting canceled. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, man, it's a absolutely fantastic piece of work, and I was in the Natural History Museum here in Dublin with my girlfriend, and she said, you know, you should do Northlander someday. And I because we were looking at all these like Viking remains, you know, like from that were dug up from like all these different places in Ireland. And I said to her, yeah, I'm just going to ring up Brian Wood on my imaginary phone here and just sort that out. I just thought it was ridiculous that that would happen. And then I'd say 3 months later, I got the email from Brian asking if I'd do it. It was I think the only reason I could really do it is because I'd been given really generous deadlines on the Thunderbolts issues. So I just decided if I work my ass off big time for the next 4 months, I can maybe swing it. And it was a lot of work, but I'm really, really glad I did it. I'm very, very happy with the work I did on that book. And I'm very proud that I got to be on such a fantastic book, and the colors and the writing. And I'm just delighted. It was worth all those late nights.
Yeah, and I mean, aside from the writing, I mean, you get to be part of, like, you know, like just the artistic legacy of that book. I mean, from, you know, from Davide Gianfelice to you had Ryan Kelly, you had all these fantastic artists on this book.
It's the amount of fantastic artists who have been on that book. It was actually very intimidating, especially that I was following Paul Azaceta, because I love Paul's work. Uh-huh. I think he's absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. So to follow him was actually really, really tough. Because I read the first issue, mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, this is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then Ryan Wood emailed me. I'm like, oh, how can I follow this? But I muddled through.
Hey, I think you did a fantastic job, though. I love that very first splash page in your first issue. You know, it basically the title page with all the, you know, the credits and all that. The girl just getting launched. You know, with getting hit by the arrow and crashing into that pantry. It was just like such an amazing shot.
Thanks, man.
There's so much motion being conveyed in that page. I'm just like, wow, it's you don't even need a caption, you don't need anything, and then I'm glad they didn't put anything over it, like any word balloons or anything, because you know what's going on just by looking.
Overall, I liked how little dialogue there is in it. It's very it's more like, and it's nothing against Thunderbolts because I love working on Thunderbolts, but it's more in line with the kind of work I enjoy. Like, I like watching The Wire and Deadwood, and it's more in line with that type of storytelling. Like, it's more restrained, and even the way I drew the book. I don't know if you've noticed, but like I took a different approach to how I drew the issue, not like the actual inking or draw or penciling, but the storytelling. I restrained myself a lot more with the storytelling. I kept things very pared back, very a lot of wide shots.
You seem to have opened up a bit more as far as your panel layouts are concerned.
Brian gave me a lot of room to do that, and as well, like, there was, like, the backgrounds were totally different. In the second issue, there's this double page spread of the main character drinking water from the river, and that's what the shot is. It's not a giant epic action shot. It's I got to play with negative space, and I got to really pull back a lot more, and I think it really pushed myself as a storyteller more, at the risk of sounding pretentious.
Yeah, I really dug that spread a lot, and all it says is, you know, it just has her name, you know, daughter, fifth generation, and has the credits, and
it might be my favorite page I've ever drawn, and there's barely any drawing in it.
I can agree with you on that. It is a really cool shot. It's very it's very atmospheric. It kind of tells you what, you know, it's in a very subtle way, it kind of tells you what this book is about, what this story is about, and just, you know, the type of story and the tone of this particular story. You know, it kind of tells you in that spread.
I'm glad you think so, because I mean, that's something I think is very important, is tone, and the way that somebody else told me recently, they thought, like, I must have loved horror because, you know, everything's so dark and with shadows the way I draw, but it's more to get a certain atmosphere. And I think that the way I draw it does work in Thunderbolts, because it's for a more serious mood, mm-hmm. or, you know, like, I think you'll find the better drawings are the more moody your shots are, when people are being serious is when my drawing kind of comes out a lot more. And I think it translates well into a book like Thunderbolts, you know, even though it's a superhero book, it's still, I don't want to say edgy, but it's got a different tone than the rest. And I really try and make sure that there's an atmosphere in the pages I draw. Yeah. So I'm really glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, I mean, with Thunderbolts, especially since they're all really bad guys to begin with, so that's why the style and the tone you use for that kind of works. On Northland or so, I mean, the last page of issue 45 I thought was fantastic too. Again, it's very sparse as far as actual illustrations concerned, but, you know, just, you know, the mood and the lighting, and then, like, you know, you use, like, it looks like a lightning bolt, you know. Yeah, it is the scene. And there's so much motion, so much going on. Just, you know, just the way you drew the grass. There's so much to. There's a lot of little nuances in your work that I absolutely enjoy. And I thought, you know, Northlanders really brought it out. And
yeah, I found this. I think that's why I found it so rewarding. Is I got to stretch those kind of muscles, which I just don't get to do on Thunderbolts because there's so many characters and locations and things happening. It's I mean, if you look at how I lay out a Thunderbolts page, I'm a lot more ambitious as regards panel layout. As long as it doesn't get too distracting, I try and push things to make the pages more exciting. But I think naturally it's more in my blood to do to tell stories like that, being a bit more restrained, like not having to worry about filling a page with detail, you know.
And the last page of your second issue of Northlanders, number four, the final issue of 46 was also great. He's just going down the steps, and I don't know, the motion that's added by his cloak, kind of like, you know, being up there while he's going on his way down. Again, it's subtle, but you know,
yeah, that's why I like how Brian writes. He writes sparsely. In order to give, it seems to me anyway, in order to give you more room to play around with things. I mean, I could have drawn that entire room, but you know, I decided to just black it out, and instead I emphasized the cape and how the light's coming down from above, and you know, the composition and things like that. I enjoy more playing around with, but you know, hopefully I get to do more stuff like that down the line.
Now, again, this makes me even more sad that this book is getting canceled. And
yeah,
I wish you know, you would have gotten the chance to do more of this stuff because it's quite great. Now, of course, you've done some new stuff on Northlanders. Is there any? I mean, you mentioned that this is the type of thing that you never get to do on Thunderbolts. Like maybe sometime down the road, you know, since you, I don't know how, you know, how closely you work with Jeff Parker or do you work exclusively with the editor. I'm not sure, but you know, is there any chance that maybe you could incorporate some of the stuff that you've been doing here into your Thunderbolt stuff?
I don't really think so. I don't think it's really feasible because there's just so much going. Like Jeff jam packs his issues with story, especially with so many issues of Thunderbolts coming out. I think Jeff is very much trying to put as much story possible into these issues so that people feel like that they're, you know, there's substantial story. I think Brian Wood is doing a different type of storytelling, which it depends. It's a very specific audience who likes that, and I think, you know, a lot of that audience may not like superhero comics. I think the only way you'd get away with doing something like that would be, you know, Daredevil maybe, you know, something like that maybe. But I don't think you can do it with a superhero book, like a superhero team book.
Man, I just realized that you'd be awesome on Daredevil if ever.
Pat, I met Steve Wacker at a convention in Leeds like 2 weeks ago, and I took everything I had to not grab him by the lapel and go, "Give me Daredevil, please, give me Daredevil." But I decided no, that probably wouldn't be a good career move.
Yeah, maybe he'll listen to this.
Yeah, you never know. I would kill to do Daredevil big time. Yeah. Or something like Punisher, something moodier where, I mean, that would be the perfect balance between both those kind of stories. You know, something more restrained, moody. But I just think of the team book, there's just so much going on. You can't really get away with that.
Yeah, well, I said I love what you've been doing on both Thunderbolts and Northlanders. How many issues of Northlanders do you have left?
When this podcast comes out, they'll all be out. Issue 47 is my last one, and that comes out at the end of December. So it'll be out by the time this podcast is out. So yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah, well, thanks for the good work, man.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah, like I said. It's really cool to kind of follow your work and just, you know, as it kind of evolved and grew, like, you know, between Thunderbolts and Northlanders, you know, it's some amazing stuff. So I really hope, you know, they take notice and give you something even bigger. I mean, I love you on Thunderbolts, don't get me wrong. And, you could draw that book forever as far as I'm concerned, but I would like to see you get more recognition for your stuff.
Thanks a lot, man. I kind of do worry about, like, you know, am I on one book too long and that, but it's, I love Jeff's writing, and he keeps pushing every story he gives me. It pushes me in. Like there's that part in the Fear Itself storyline where they go into Juggernaut's mind, and everything becomes like abstract and nuts. And you know, I would never, I can't imagine a scenario in which I would ever draw that something like that again. Jeff keeps pushing me to do something more imaginative, and I think that's making me a better artist. But there is actually a strange thing with this, because in some weird ways, this story I'm doing now dovetails into how I started Thunderbolts. So it's a very kind of weird cyclical thing going on. But I'm not going to lie, I would love to do something like, you know, something else in my life. Actually, some of the best stuff Jeff's done is he put Spider-Man in an issue so I could draw him. And I got to draw Spider-Man. So,
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and that was my one peeve about the Shadowlands story is like it was a Daredevil crossover and I didn't get to draw Daredevil, I don't know, maybe someday.
Yeah, well, and also during Shadowlands, Daredevil was not really the Daredevil that, you know, that I think that anyone would want to draw. I mean, that character had gone through so much crap in the last few years, and while there's some compelling stories going on there, the Shadowlands thing kind of really pushed him over the top. So I thought, you know. If you were to draw Daredevil at that time, you wouldn't have drawn I don't think you'd be drawing the Daredevil you wanted to draw anyway.
That's a very fair point. Yeah.
Yeah. So at this point, let's move to some listener questions.
Sure.
First question I got is from Ryan Holiday on Facebook, and he goes, "How much? I think we may have gone through this, but feel free to elaborate further. How much input do you have in creating the various looks of the Thunderbolts as they travel through time?" And he says, "Thank you for the Mr. Hyde piece that's now hanging on his wall."
Oh, right. Ryan, of course. He was very, very patient. I think he was waiting like half a year for that piece, and I had already drawn it. It was Jeff's idea to do that, but I mean, I think Kev got to do more interesting designs for the World War II one than I did with Victorian one, because the Victorian, they're all wearing suits. Mm-hmm. I just tried and, you know, have some element of the superhero costume shine through in the Victorian costume, like with Fixer, instead of the eye gear, I gave him a monocle. Instead of all that tech, he's got a cane, but, you know, I try to have a Thunderbolts like motif going through there. I tried to give him a waistcoat that would be the red that is the red is on his costume. With Boomerang, I tried to give him, I gave a kind of a diagonal, padding going on in his waistcoat to kind of, you know, get that diagonal from the superhero costume. Centurius has a scarf instead of the bowl. They were very, like, you know, very small little things, but it's all I could really do, like, without making them look ridiculous. Wait till people see the designs Kev did for the medieval arc. I think actually Kev's gotten to do way more wacky, crazy designs for the Thunderbolts, and they look great.
I can't wait to see that. Next question we have a bunch of Twitter questions. So next one is from Rich Ginter. Yeah, you probably know him. He works for
Marvel. I do know Rich very well.
He goes, why are you so Irish and why do you hate the Ocean's 11, 12, and 13 movies?
No, I don't know Rich. Next question. I Can't Help It is the first one. And man, those movies just got so bad. It's weird that like one movie that can have so much like charm can spawn sequels that are just so devoid of any kind of likable plot. Anyway, next question, please.
Next is from David Dingman, a.k.a. Daco243, and he asks, how does it feel to work on a book that you read as a kid? Thunderbolts, specifically.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty nuts. I'm drawing the original ones now, but I'm able to do that because I have the first 9 issues, like I bought when I was a kid. It's very surreal. I think the most surreal thing was when I saw the cover for issue 172. They released it during NYCC, and I see, you know, Mark Bagley has drawn 2 characters that I designed. That was probably the craziest thing because, you know, I grew up copying his Spider-Man, you know, over and over and over again. And I bought Thunderbolts when it came out, and it's very, very weird seeing him draw characters I designed. It's great. There's this wonderful sense of wish fulfillment getting to do it, like getting to draw Spider-Man. And like I spent so much time making sure that was the best Spider-Man drawing I'd ever done. And I don't know how many people even saw it, but I really wanted that to look like a good Spider-Man drawing. But, it's great to be able to scratch those kind of nerdy wishes you have, you know, getting to draw that. But I wouldn't want to do it all the time. You know, I can see the benefit of doing like creator own work or different types of stories, but I have absolutely no problem scratching my fanboy itch.
Awesome. Next up, again, another question from him is, what has been the most gratifying and surprising thing about the Eclectic Mix and Comic Twerk blogs?
I guess a sense of community in some regards. With the Mix one, we all kind of knew each other a little bit, but through the blog, we all got to know each other a lot better. And I would count all of them as my mates now, like very good mates. I would talk to them more than people I know who I grew up with. Like I was saying earlier, the effort of putting your work beside somebody else made me really push myself more than I probably was. It really made me think about what I was doing. And when I started to think about what I was doing is when my work got, you know, much better. And then the comic art as well, to the same thing to a bigger degree, is a sense of community. I mean, we would email each other, like, if there was some problem or there was some kind of like dodgy guy looking to work with, or various kind of freelancer issues, like you get to run by, and I'd be mates with a lot of those guys now, like good friends. Like I talked to Chris Somney a lot, and before that blog, I just like looked at his work and thought the guy was a genius, you know. Fowler as well. It's a wonderful thing to be able to call those people friends, and it all came from just liking each other's work. I guess it's crazy.
Yeah. Fowler is a hilarious guy, by the way.
Fowler is a demigod of a man.
Yes.
And in both in character and stature.
Yeah. Next up is from Clayton Cowles. Oh, boy. He goes, Marge, is Lisa at Camp Granada?
Clayton should really put that... He should really put that tape back where he got it.
And he has an actual real question. He goes, "What is?"
I'm pretty sure that one was a real question. I answered it. God damn it!
No, I this happened also when I recorded with him recently. You know,
I haven't heard it. I felt bad. My Simpsons questions. So I answered a couple. I asked a couple of sincere ones.
Yeah, but he has another one. He has an actual sincere one. He goes, "What is your dream project? And have you ever considered writing?"
Thank you for your question, Clayton. I get asked this a lot, and I always feel bad because I've always the same answer. I do have something that I have started writing, but it would essentially be a indie black and white book. It would be something along the lines of Blankets. I don't really have an itch to write superhero work. Something I would do would be a lot more personal, whereas what I do get to do is do superhero comics and other mainstream comics with some of the best writers. So I think I'm better off drawing stories written by Jeff Parker and Brian Wood for the companies. But there is something I would like to do one day. But at the moment, I'm really busy doing the work for hire work. People seem to be finding my work, following it. So I think I'm going to make the most of this while I can. And then once I have the time and do my own graphic novel. And a dream gig would be, I think, I was saying Daredevil, yeah. Batman, Punisher, X-Men. Man, I would love to do like X-Men. But I think in a lot of ways, I find the things I would like to do are a little difficult to do now because, you know, Marvel are they're bringing out more stories. They're continuing their you know the story of their universe. But you know, I would really like to do something more seminal, like you know, a Daredevil Born Again or a Batman Year One, something. You know, independent of the main continuity and something that'll be a little bit more timeless. But I think it's really hard to do in today's market because, you know, things like that aren't selling as well, you know? So there's just more and more stories about the universe. And as much as I love working with Jeff on Thunderbolts, but I would like to be doing a book where it's just me and I don't have to kind of like peek out from under Kev Walker's shadow because that guy's a legend and he's fantastic. And, no matter what, like I will read a review that's like, oh, this issue isn't done by Kev Walker, and I would really like an opportunity to kind of not have that shadow at some stage.
Oh yeah, well I think you're building up to that point. You know, as more people recognize, find your stuff, and you know, they'll just think, yeah, you and you know, and it sucks to, you know, for people to have to compare it to the other guy, but, you know, it's going to get to that point where you'd be regarded as equals because you guys are doing the same amount of work on the book at a certain point. So
it's crazy. I'm drawing my 10th issue right now, and it's mad because, like, just over a year ago I started, and it's even crazier. Is that was issue 148, and now I'm doing, like, 172. That's a lot of issues in the last year.
Yeah. I think Marvel's been stepping up in production. Like, you know, a lot of books have been going, like, kind of bi-weekly. And yeah. I have no issue with that because, you know, I get to get the next chapter faster. So.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's just more story, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. I think just the one downside from an artist's point of view is it makes it harder to make the story all your own. When you spend all day long working on a story, you want to feel like it's your own. Mm-hmm. That's one of the advantages of drawing comics. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because there's so much more story coming out, it's not practical to. I mean, I would not be able to draw all the issues of Thunderbolts. Even if I did, they'd be terrible because I'd be working too fast. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not practical to be the one ongoing artist on a book right now. It doesn't seem to be, at least.
I mean, I think the comics, as far as, you know, the creative teams, they're kind of going through a sort of evolution because of production and how things. You know, people want their stuff faster. And, you know, they want to keep satisfying the demand because, you know, sometimes people may forget that a book comes out. I mean, you know, the monthly wait is, you know, with TV, of course, coming out every week. There's a lot of competition, you know, so you want to get yourself out.
I actually don't understand. I used to live in Scotland with a friend of mine, and we were big into Battlestar Galactica, and it would come out maybe for a few weeks and then it would be a hiatus for a few weeks. And he'd be like swearing up and down going like, oh, I want to come out. I'm like, it'll come out. And when it comes out, we'll watch it. Like, I think it's because, like, because I'm from Ireland, we didn't have like major syndicated shows like he did over here. So we would get shows kind of whenever if Star Trek The Next Generation wasn't on one week, I'd be really upset, but I'd see it next week. And, you know, I never got comics regularly, as I was telling you. Like, I always got them intermittently. So I didn't really have that, you know, it's got to come out now. It's got to be in time. It's got to come out this week. Mm-hmm. I've never had that mentality. So with comics, I really don't care. Like, whenever they come out, I'm happy. But there does seem to be a very, like, there seems to be, like, a momentum that if comics don't keep it up, then, especially with indie books, I think if your book is late, sales go down, and then you're suffering.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, I'm more than happy for the somewhat accelerated schedule. So this is
good. It's great. Like, you know, if you're loving Daredevil right now, like, Daredevil comes, I'm not sure how often, but it definitely, I'd say it comes out more than once a month.
Yeah, that.
Maybe three times in 2 months, or maybe four times in 3 months. But you just get more of the story that you're enjoying. There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. The same goes for another one of my favorites, Uncanny X-Force. Which, by the way, you did an awesome Uncanny X-Force piece that you put that you put up for a charity auction. That was a gorgeous piece.
I was really, really happy with that, and I'd be lying if I said I would hate to draw that book.
Oh man, I wouldn't mind seeing you on that book after seeing that. You'd be great.
You know what, Pat? I wouldn't mind seeing me on that book either.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, your style really lends itself well to a lot of different books. I think.
I'm loving Thunderbolts, but there's so much stuff in Marvel I would enjoy drawing. I'm really not going to complain. But that is a great book. I want to draw the books that I would like to read. Thankfully, Thunderbolts is absolutely one of those books, so I really can't complain.
Excellent. And, of course, the final question we have here from Twitter is from at Whoa Jordy, or aka colorist Jordy Belair, and she asks, now that you've finished Northlanders, you've had a taste of Vertigo. Do you want more? Lots more? A little more?
That's my girlfriend teasing me. Yeah, I do, actually, Jordy. I have to say, doing Vertigo work was something I always wanted to do as well. And it's very strange. I think not a lot of guys are in a position where they could do superhero work and Vertigo work. It's really interesting if you think about Chris Somney's career is really interesting to me, because I think he could have easily been pigeonholed as a Vertigo artist from how he draws. But, you know, I think Marvel have a very open door to more interesting artists, and, you know, you wouldn't have thought that guy would be drawing like fantastic work like on Captain America and Bucky. That is like some of the best comics I've read in ages, and the art is stunning, and all because I think Marvel were more open to a guy like Chris. So I think I'm actually quite grateful I'm in a position where I can do different types of stories and I'm not pigeonholed to like just being the quote unquote Vertigo guy. But as I was saying about Northlanders, I liked drawing those type of stories. So I definitely would like to do more stuff.
Awesome. And actually, you made note of, you know, Marvel being very open to different art styles. I mean, I think it helps that, you know, the editor in chief Axel Alonso used to be one of Vertigo's guys. You know, he was responsible for a lot of the really really good stuff that came out during his tenure there. So I think I think they're more open because, you know, comic art is comic art, and any kind of art can work.
I would disagree with you, Pat. I think art is art, and drawing is drawing. And I think comic art is kind of limiting because that puts a certain idea in your head, and that's actually not the work I'm really interested in. I mean, just from my point of view, there's guys who have an interesting take on drawing, and I'd like seeing them draw superheroes rather than somebody who you would say would be a quote unquote superhero artist. When I did meet Stephen Wacker, I actually made sure I thanked him because he put really interesting guys like Eric Canetti, Javier Pulido, Paul Azaceta, on Amazing Spider-Man, which is like the biggest book Marvel have. I can't think of a lot of editors who would put different looking guys in a book like that. You'd think they just put like somebody completely dependable, somebody who's drawn Spider-Man for years and years and years. And I think that Marvel generally seem to have like a really, really good take on interesting artists. I think some of my favorite artists work there.
Yeah, it's if you look at looking at Marvel books right now, they're such a diverse, you know, the styles are so diverse. There's so many different types of artists. Like, you know, it's a far cry from what was in the 90s, because everyone in the 90s was trying to draw like, you know, like the Image founders. You know, everyone's trying to draw like them back then. But you look at Marvel now, you got people like, you know, Sarah Pichelli, you got Kev Walker, Humberto Ramos, all these great artists with different styles, and everyone stands out. And you know, it's such a wonderful time to look at comics, because there's
I actually found that a little bit disappointing with the 52 relaunch was that it was such a bold and gutsy move. I thought it was a like great idea, but there isn't the diversity in art that I would like. Like, I don't really like manga, but I think there should be more manga stuff out there, because people do like manga, and there is definitely an audience for it. I think that it really sounds like I'm sucking up to Marvel right now. I think they do. I think it's probably because of Quesada. Like, if I think about it, because he's an artist, he's probably more open to hiring guys who were doing something more interesting, rather than somebody who would just kind of do a Spider-Man drawing that you've seen a million times already.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that.
Well, I agree with me too. So I think we're good.
At this point, we're going to close up. Where can people find you online, Declan?
Where can people find me? They can find me on my own blog, which is dshalv.blogspot.com. On Twitter, I'm Declan Shalvey. Also the eclecticmix.blogspot.com and comictwart.com.
And I will put links for all of these on the show notes. And of course, for our closing question of this episode, if you were to stick the Thunderbolts in the 28 Days Later world, who would survive?
That is an interesting question. Does survive mean not be turned into infected?
Not turned infected, or, you know, I mean, you could pick any Thunderbolt from that you've drawn.
I'll be honest, I think if somebody bit Hyde, nobody would survive.
That's a good one. But
maybe Ghost. Actually, yeah, because Ghost has a containment suit.
Yeah.
And nobody could break the containment suit because he could turn, he can go intangible. God, this is a nerdy conversation.
Yeah, that's awesome. This is great.
why can't we just rate the super hunks instead?
See, I don't know about that. So Ghost wins then. Okay. I don't know. I was going to say Juggernaut, but, you know, then again, I don't think they could bite through him because
a fair point. Yeah. But I would say that probably you could probably get blood in his eye or mouth and then he'd be infected.
Oh, that's also true.
Oh, maybe not, because he doesn't need to breathe. Oh, God. I'm going to say that he would get infected.
Okay. Well,
let the internet be damned.
Well, once again, Declan, thank you very much for doing the show. It's been a lot of fun, and again, I'm a big fan of your work, and I've been digging, Northlanders especially and Thunderbolts. But good luck to whatever you do next, and I hope you get to do one of those dream projects down the line.
Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate the support, and thanks for talking to me.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and of course. Anyone listening, you can find me at my usual spots. You go to twitter.com/PatLoika and follow me there, or go to about.me/PatLoika. And don't forget to visit our sponsors, cheapgraphicnovels.com, and you can pick up some of Declan's work. Some of his Thunderbolt stuff has been collected. There's two trades, for example. The Shadowland Thunderbolts trade is up there, as well as the Thunderbolts Violet Rejection. You can get these for 45% off, and to keep an eye out down the road for his Northlander stuff. It's part of the Icelandic trilogy. So, yeah. Check out our friends there. They've been very good to us. And tell them that we sent you. And until next week, you guys take it easy, and we'll see you then.